Hey everybody, I just wanted to start this one off by apologizing in advance for the audio quality you're going to hear. Sean and Clay come through fine, but for some reason when we were recording, my audio goes sort of in and out a little bit, so at some points it's kind of hard to hear me. I tried to fix it as best I could. I don't think it ruins the episode, but I just wanted to give an apology in advance. It got fixed in the second part of this episode, so if you enjoyed this one, stick around for the second one and everything will be back to normal. Thanks again.
Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. If you haven't tuned in before, this is a podcast where we are running through all 178 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings about each and every one. Right now, we're up to episode 26 of season 3, season finale, directed by Cliff Bohl, written by Michael Piller, and it aired back on June 18th, 1990. We're talking about Best of Both Worlds, part 1. Clay and Sean are going to join me to talk about this one, and we're going to wrap up the third season with an episode that is surprising to no one and always considered to be one of the most popular episodes of TNG. Best of Both Worlds, the Starship Enterprise responds to a distress call from a Federation colony and arrives to discover the colony gone. The Federation suspect the Borg, cybernetic humanoids that assimilate individuals into their hive mind. So Clay and Sean are going to help me talk about this one. Right after this audio break, we are going to go deep on the Best of Both Worlds, Part 1.
I've also ordered a standing yellow alert. All Federation and allied outposts have been warned. Ops will continue to monitor long-range sensors. I've assigned Data LaForge and Mr. Crusher to work with Commander Shelby.
Good. You've covered all the bases. What's your impression of Shelby?
She knows her stuff.
She has your full confidence.
Well, I think she needs supervision. She takes the initiative a little too easily, sometimes with risks.
Sounds like a young lieutenant commander I recruited as a first officer.
Perhaps.
Will. What the hell are you still doing here?
Sir?
You've been offered the Melbourne.
I've decided not to pursue that commission at this time.
She's a fine ship, Will.
Yes, but she's not the Enterprise. With all due respect, sir, you need me, particularly now.
Indeed. Starfleet needs good captains, particularly now. Reconsider your decision.
Are you telling me to leave, Captain?
I'm asking you to look at your career objectively. Well... you're ready to work without a net. You're ready to take command. And you know, Enterprise will go along just fine without you.
We have arrived. The end of season 3. End of season 3. Episode 26. End of season 3. It's called The Best of Both Worlds. A little known episode that hardly anyone knows about or cares about, I suppose, to go that far. I'm joined by Clay and Sean. Guys, how are you? Clay, how are you?
Not too bad, Wes. How you doing?
Good, good. Sean, how are you?
Good. I'm finally glad that we're getting into good Star Trek.
Oh, I feel season 3's been okay so far. You guys have both watched a couple episodes of season 3. Any general thoughts on the season so far?
I think it's been fine. I think it's had the most high points so far.
Yep.
If you're going just like overall season look backs, I'd say season 3 definitely has the highest points they've hit yet.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
Because, yeah, Sean, you had The Defector and a couple others I can't remember. So you did see yesterday's Enterprise. You were both here for that one, too.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. When I go back and re-listen to these, the whole series, I tend to go to season 4, 5, 6. Like, that's kind of where I do a lot of – I re-listen.
Right.
And I only go back to season 3 maybe for a handful, including this one.
Oh, interesting. I don't know if I'm looking ahead too far. I feel like season 4 could be a little bit of a letdown from season 3, but I'll see when I get there, I suppose. Just looking at the titles, that's like my general sort of sense of what's coming.
The titles that tell you nothing about the episode.
That's true. They tell me very little, but I have this sort of general sense about them. But we'll see. We'll get to that at that point. Anyway, we're here to talk about The Best of Both Worlds, which is, as I said, the season 3 finale. Two-parter, first time that TNG is actually going to use a cliffhanger, or even a two-parter, which we talked about before.
Kind of surprising. We'd gone through the discussion of Sins of the Father, arguing whether or not that would have been better as a two-part episode, but they had not done it until this point. Written by Michael Piller. This I think this might be one of his few only solo script credit, but that, I might be wrong about that. Anyway, I'm going to give you two thoughts about this one. I see how you guys respond. Thought number one. It's refreshing to get an episode where an admiral comes on board and isn't a complete douchebag.
although he is a bit of a creep.
He is a bit of a creep, yeah. My wife mentioned that too. She said, am I supposed to like this guy after a sort of weird comment?
Keep your eyes on that one.
just an old man's fantasy, Jean-Luc. Oh, yeah. He looked very much like the Spider-Man meme of the Spider-Man sitting behind the desk when he said it too. Oh, it was kind of funny. And the other weird thing, or the other fact, big takeaway for me, I don't know if this is one of those things that's so obvious that you just kind of miss it, but it's always sort of astounding to me that Best of Both Worlds is a Riker episode.
Mm.
When you think about what happens in this one, you tend to gravitate towards it must be Picard heavy.
Mm.
It's really not, and it's fascinating. It ties into a little bit of trivia before we start the discussion. Michael Piller, executive producer we've mentioned before, had signed up for only one season contract. So this was the only season he was actually contracted to work on. He wrote this episode, not sure if he was going to come back to the show or not, and he wrote it as an open ending. He didn't know what the resolution was going to be when he wrote it. Figured that the next showrunner would have to come in and come up with an answer. As to how fire doesn't work. but yeah, you can see a lot of the Piller turmoil in the Riker character in this episode. It's a lot of, you know, should someone move on if they're happy somewhere, or should they just stick around and try to make the best of it?
Yeah.
So what do you guys think about general thoughts about Best of Both Worlds?
Clay?
Well, I have probably an unpopular opinion here.
Sure.
And that is, I think that this is hands down the closest to perfect episode of Star Trek you can get.
Okay.
And I'm saying that, I'm only saying that's, what did I say? I'm only saying that's an unpopular opinion just because I know a lot of people point to, Yesterday's Enterprise as, you know, the number one. I think that's probably like a nostalgic thing where I don't think a lot of people who make that decision actually have gone back and watched that episode again.
Yep.
Because as we pointed out when we covered it, like a good quarter to a half of that episode is kind of bad.
Yes.
This episode, however, is almost perfect.
Mm-hmm.
It cheats a little bit because it's tough to really give it a fair shake as a single episode when the end of it is so clearly just open ended. And I mean, like, if you don't have to address that ending, then it's I don't know how you get better than this because it's just such it's perfect.
Yeah,
I mean everything that we've talked about for the past three seasons in terms of structure and technical points. In the things that, you know, I didn't think they did really well in terms of having their B plots kind of completely have nothing to do with their A plots and all that and involving characters. It's all perfect here.
Right.
Both sides of the plot are seamlessly worked together. The character stuff is great, except for Troy, who I think is, again, useless in this episode.
Hey, she gets the evacuation drill underway or whatever.
Yeah. She also gets the scene where Riker's talking to her and he says, what do you think I should do? And she goes, I don't know. What do you think you should do?
that's strong therapy. Yeah, she doesn't have a good showing here. Go ahead.
But it's just like, I mean, I don't know how you can get better than this. So to kind of take a step back again. I know that as far as the original series goes, people refer to City on the Edge of Forever as the best original series episode.
Yeah, generally.
And I've always thought
just
that
so everyone knows, that's the one where they go back in time and Kirk falls in love with the woman that has to die to keep like the proper timeline in order.
Right. And I've always felt that was a little bit unfair because that episode is not representative of the concept. And because it's, you know, it's a time travel episode where they go to Earth and they're in Earth in the 1940s or whatever. And it's that's not representative of the general concept of Star Trek.
Right. That's not 90% of what Star Trek does in on an right. episode.
I would pick Balance of Terror, which is the basically it's a submarine fight with the Romulans, which yep. is it's awesome. For this series, I would say the same thing when people go to Yesterday's Enterprise. Yesterday's Enterprise is a little bit more closer to a straight Star Trek episode than City on the Edge of Forever.
Yeah,
but it's still a time travel thing involving stuff that's happened in the past. You know, like Tasha's death and all that stuff you need to know going in. If you were to pick any episode of Star Trek and show it to somebody cold, I would hands down pick this episode.
Yeah.
Because you can go into this episode not knowing anything about anything, and when he says fire at the end of the episode, you go, holy shit.
Yeah.
Right. Right after the Borg calls him by his nickname, number yes. one. That's super chilly.
That's been a runner, which I hadn't noticed. You guys didn't watch Sarek.
No.
Which was a couple episodes. Sarek is I'm going to get gushy, but Sarek is like a beautiful episode of TNG that I sort of underappreciated going into this. But right. in that one, there's the mind meld between Picard and Sarek, and after it happens, they sort of assume each other's personality slightly. Sarek calls Riker number one.
Oh, really? Yeah, oh, that's so cool.
It's kind of an interesting thing that they started to play with it, but they do it very effectively here.
I mean, you could argue against me saying that if you really want to look at something encompassing the concept of Star Trek, this might not be it because this is a very military-driven episode, and that's not really what the quote-unquote concept is about.
Yeah, I want to get back to that. I want to get back to that, and I want to get back to your point about Yesterday's Enterprise. But, Sean, why don't you give me your general thoughts about
shut up. Just me. Just me.
Sean's phone is going to drop anyway, and then we'll continue.
I know. I could have Skyped cut out like 10 minutes ago, and you guys wouldn't have even noticed until now. It's funny. I usually, because I'll put into the DVD player, or at least I used to, the beginning of season 4, and I'll just listen to it while I'm working. So I always forget the first half of this, which is, you know, the end of season 3. It's hard to judge it knowing what I know about how it unfolds. So I'm doing my best to sort of just judge it as a standalone because I know that's kind of the idea here.
Yes.
I agree with everything Clay's saying. I think that they did the best they could, and within the confines of the writing, with the confines of the budget, the characters were pretty true to themselves. It didn't occur to me that it was a Riker episode, and you're totally right, and I feel silly for never catching that.
Yeah, it's odd. It's a lot of Riker too. I mean, he's in most of the scenes.
Yeah,
it's actually funny.
Yeah.
I was just gonna say I was watching it with my girlfriend, and she even pointed out how Picard kind of doesn't really have a lot to do in this episode.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't.
No. But one thing that I did this episode started off for me that I didn't like is the consistent reminder that Riker could have a captain's position by now, and he keeps turning it down. And I feel like that weakens the character a lot when they keep reminding. Yes. If he's so smart and ambitious and capable in the real world, then he definitely would have had his own command by now. And I feel like him turning it down to essentially stay on the show kind of weakens the character a bit.
Yes. It's
I never thought about that.
It's actually a writer thing that they had mentioned going into the writing of this, that they were that fans were bringing the concern of why is Riker still around at this point. And so they kind of wrote this one to elevate him slightly, you know, he basically is a captain at the end of this. He has command of the Enterprise by the end of the episode.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's kind of.
It works.
Yeah, it does. It's kind of, it's having your cake and eating it too. The character's not going to leave, but he's allowed to take command.
Right. It works in this because you don't know what's going to happen. And he's basically forced to become the captain, even though he's shy about it. Thinking ahead to later seasons when he's still second in command, it kind of bums me out. I feel like it weakens the character.
Yeah. It's funny because in the intro credits, when the names are coming up, it says starring Patrick Stewart and Frakes, and then it gets the also starring thing, which I always think is funny when they differentiate between the also starring and the starring roles.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's funny that Riker is, or Frakes is, basically gets equal billing with Stewart. You know, it's a very minor thing, but it's fascinating. And especially in the early episodes where Riker was much, much more prominent than he is nowadays, kind of, even into season three.
Yeah. Well, I think part of that is just because they've got characters now, you know. As I'm sure before it was like, yeah, there's the captain, he's Jean-Luc Picard, and then there's the first and second in command, William Riker, and then there's a whole ship of other crazy guys.
Right.
Where now it's like all of those crazy characters have backstories and are interestingly written and have things to do. And so, you know, you've got a lot of people to deal with, and you can't just focus on Riker all the time.
Yeah. I mean, it's also a, you know, they made this decision when they started the show that this captain wasn't going to be Kirk. He wasn't going to fly down into the middle of a fist fight and get into it.
Right.
It really neuters the captain position doing that. You know what I mean? Because Riker basically assumes the Kirk mantle. Which is not, you know, an unusual opinion to have. So he's allowed to do all the sort of fist fighting and, like, fucking down on the planets. And Picard is just saying...
That was actually the alternate title for this series. It was going to be Star Trek : fist fighting and fucking.
Or fist fucking, for sure.
Fist fucking and fighting, yeah. That seems the right way to go. It's a weird thing that I think they're starting to reconcile here. I did want to go back to Clay. You had mentioned a point about yesterday's Enterprise. You like this one better than yesterday's Enterprise. I'm going through and I'm trying to figure out my hierarchy of the best five episodes in this, and I'm having a very difficult time. I guess my one problem with Best of Both Worlds would be I feel I get a bit more of an emotional kick out of yesterday's Enterprise, just on terms of part one of Best of Both Worlds.
Okay, but do you get that emotional kick because – so I guess it's difficult to rank because you have to decide how you're going to look at them, I guess. Because I think if you're looking at them completely standalone, then – well, even then I wouldn't put yesterday's Enterprise higher than this because I think the stuff with Tasha is not good. I mean I understand it. I think everything else in that episode is great. I mean, Picard is awesome. Everybody else does a good job. The situation they're in is really interesting. But that B plot with Tasha and Shooter McGavin is just garbage.
I knew it. I knew you were going to say that.
Well, here's my, maybe we'll stay off of this for now. I'll just say my last thing for that would be the Guinan Picard scene in yesterday's Enterprise crushes the Guinan Picard scene in Best of Both Worlds, which is,
I would agree with, but I just think like as an overall whole package, I find it's tough to be completely, I don't know, because if you look at yesterday's Enterprise, that's one episode that has to be wrapped up by the end of the episode, and they do a lot there. If they wanted to, could they have stretched that into two? Maybe. But it's not, I mean, the stuff that's packed in doesn't feel so packed in that it, maybe I say something different when we actually covered it, but as I remember it, it doesn't feel so packed in that it could be split off into two episodes.
No, it feels, her relationship stuff feels sort of fillery.
I think I said on the episode then, anytime I think of that episode, I always think of it as a two-parter, and I'm always surprised that it's not.
Yeah.
This one, it is a little unfair because they don't have to wrap it up.
Yep.
You can just drive, and then once the front wheels go off the cliff, then you cut to black, and you don't have to explain how they get out of it.
Yes. I don't think it's to spoil anything, but generally two-parter episodes, the first part is always better than the second part. I have a hard time thinking of a case where that's not the case. It's it's much harder to give resolution to something than it is to build to a climax.
Yeah. My point of view is just I think if you wanted to pick an episode to show someone who was kind of interested in Star Trek but didn't really know where to start, I would say start with this one because I think it would be very difficult to watch if you were at all interested in the concept of the show. I think it would be very difficult to watch this episode and then come away at the end and go, "Eh, that was not right. I don't really need to see how this wraps up."
Yeah.
You know, I think it's just so well done. everything about it. They clearly put all their money into the special effects because they get a great matte painting of that giant hole at the beginning.
Yeah.
And the Borg have the ship.
Yep.
And even the Borg themselves have upgraded since the last time they showed up, so it's less less leotard and more spinny bits.
they lost their sort of military like turtlenecks or whatever they were wearing in the first bit, but
tactical black turtleneck.
So let's go through story segments here. So Sean, what are your thoughts on the impressive young Lieutenant Commander Shelby?
I guess I like her. I thought that she was obviously a necessary component to sort of scare Riker into questioning his place on the ship, and to have her be just as tenacious and all that. I like how they fight, but they still are professional and manage to work together, which is a good Starfleet, you know, rule or tenet.
Yes, yeah.
That character went on to become, in the books especially, to be on a Final Frontier or something, I forget what it's called. So she ends up being a major character, so it's interesting to see her first appearance here.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I don't think she ever comes back to obviously part two of this, but I don't think she's ever back on the show.
Does she have a relationship with Lieutenant Barclay, whatever his name is?
They should. It would balance each other out. I think she's
only on the holodeck.
She was program 19 or whatever he didn't delete.
Also, I really wish that Chief O'Brien had been given like a catchphrase, so when people come in, like in that scene where Riker finds out that she went down to the planet first, he could just be like, "Hey man, I just work here," and that was like his catchphrase for when people do weird stuff in the teleportation room.
I wish I could beam out of this awkward situation.
Anyway, sorry.
She was actually very insulting to the chain of command, I felt, and I'm glad that he decided. I was stunned that she would so blatantly dismiss him like that in front of his crew, you know?
I was surprised that everyone else, even the Admiral included, didn't consider this to be a bad bad character trait.
Clearly Admiral Cialis has a soft spot for her.
Yeah, soft spot. The
or a hard spot, as it were.
There's the scene where they're sort of going over the briefing with Riker. And she's like, "I'd like to tell the captain about my plan." And Riker says, "I'll tell the captain about the plan." She gave him no time. She left the room and immediately went to the captain's ready room because Riker goes in.
She basically beamed right into his office.
And just told him. And I think Picard played it well. Picard does a lot of good boss work here where he sort of takes both sides and doesn't make anybody seem like they screwed up, which is a good tact to have, I think, for upper management anyway.
Mm. You know,
prefer to see him get upset with her? I mean, part of me felt like he should have reprimanded her, but
yes, I think he should have.
Probably a little bit, yeah. Let me ask you guys how you feel about this. So they portray her character as someone who is, you know, going to go over your helmet if need be to get things done, and but. At the end, when Riker is making those decisions, she completely backs off and turtles.
Yeah.
And do you think that's an intentional choice, or do you think that they just didn't?
They got lucky.
I mean, I know why they do it, because I know that Riker needs to make those decisions because he's asserting himself and all that kind of stuff. But I found it interesting that she is so headstrong. But then at the end, she's the one who's like, "Well, maybe we should call mom and dad before we do anything."
Yeah, well, it's kind of the, it's the character traits they've been bringing up. It's like she hasn't learned restraint yet. Like she's all risk taking. Like we can go back to the ship. It's like Riker's the difference between them right then and there is that Riker sees the big picture and she does not see the big picture at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I love that final scene. I just like how curt Riker is with everybody. Like,
oh, he's great, yeah.
Everyone's trying to say something about something. I think the weakest point of that is Worf's, "He is a Borg."
Yeah.
which is not good. But outside of that, I just like how he's curt with everybody. He's curt with Beverly. He's curt with Geordi Geordi, mm-hmm. I like Geordi's a pretty good scene. He
I think
acknowledges it.
I think he's probably curt with Geordi because of the way Geordi just very casually informed him that 11 people just died off screen. 11 really good people just got killed.
And yeah, and Geordi ran up to the safety of the bridge. He's like, "Fuck it, I'm out of engineering."
And he tells him like he tells him that the refrigerator just got unplugged for some reason. That fridge just got unplugged, and my ice cream was in that freezer.
It was some good ice cream. I had 11 flavors of excellent ice cream.
I think because Geordi's blind, people just aren't really real to him. No. He just lacks empathy because he only sees like hazy red fields of energy.
It all looks like the Predator vision.
He's promoting up and over
exactly.
himself.
Yeah, a bunch of like Technicolor smears just died, Captain.
So I think one of the strongest points about this episode is I think the pacing is really fantastic.
Yeah.
They do the very un-Star Trek thing of not having the Borg appear in the cold open,
mm-hmm.
which feels like it would happen in any other episode if the Borg were in it. The Borg don't appear, I think, until the third act. Because it's the close of the second act where they have the it's a fantastic scene. But they do that funny thing where they show, like Picard says on screen, and they show you this tiny thing that no one could tell what it is. You can obviously tell it's a cube, but then he says magnify and it, like the music kicks in and everything.
Yep.
I'd speak to Worf afterwards and be like, when I tell you to put it on screen, make it a size and everyone don't make me ask for you to magnify the fucking thing. Just put it up there.
That's a really good point.
They do it all the time. It's a great dramatic moment, which brings me to the other thing. Besides the pacing, this is one of the few episodes where I feel the music is really memorable.
Mm.
There's the famous ending, the dun 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 dun, dun where the Riker says fire. And then the music, even when they see the Borg cube on screen for the first time, is wonderful. A little bits of music, but
it's that choir that goes Borg, Borg, Borg.
It's
I would have pushed hard for that if I was in charge of the show.
So here's.
I wonder if we could recut this in YouTube and have the Queen do the soundtrack. How awesome would that be?
Okay, I'm sorry. That's the only way this episode would be completely perfect. Because if the Borg showed up and then Princes of the Universe started, then this would be a perfect episode.
He's just a poor Borg. Nobody loves him. Let's see. So, what do people think? What are some of the weaker points of this one for people?
I have a question for you guys.
Sure, go before that.
Well, no, this is bouncing off of what you're asking.
Oh, sure.
What did you think about Riker making her second in command? Or is that the next episode?
It's not. He's not a captain yet.
Oh, see. Okay, sorry.
Yeah. So that is in part two. This will all happen. This will all go down.
All right.
I thought you were talking about when he decided, when he said he was going to go down to the ship, go on the away team. I haven't watched the second half yet.
No, I think
so.
An official,
thanks, guys.
Yeah, he undergoes like a choice or something. But yeah, we'll get to that in part two. But I do. What do you think? There's a lot of praise for this episode. Obviously, it's a fantastic episode, so it's going to be hard. But what's one thing you'd improve about this one? Clay, you want to go first?
What would I improve about this episode?
Or Sean, if you know.
Yeah, Sean. Sean, why don't you go first?
I'm gonna show my ignorance because I can't remember which episode is which. is Wolf 579 3 whatever it is?
Has not happened
in this
yet.
Episode?
Oh, they say they're massing. They're massing a fleet, is what the admiral says, but we haven't seen Wolf 359 yet. I'll go.
I would say. Okay, please.
I think that they don't make the Borg are good in this one. I really wish they had made their voice when they speak together a little bit more intimidating than it actually is.
They really just reminded me of something.
I just think it's excellent in First Contact, the movie, mm-hmm. when at the very beginning the ship, the Enterprise is ordered to stay away from the fight, and they hear over like the audio link that the Borg have arrived. And it's that awesome scene of you hear this sort of chatter between the Federation ships before getting ready for it, like Borg cube approaching, blah, 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 like arm phases, whatever. And then the Borg just sort of override the transmission. And they sound fantastic in First Contact. It's like they sound like it's a bunch of people talking, but it's a much more intimidating kind of thing. This one, it just sounds like a bunch of people talking, which I think fits the tone of Next Generation. But I wish it was a little bit more atmospheric or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. I think you kind of reminded me of what I think I would change. I would change the Borg in general. I just think they are they're so stiff. You know, I mean, like they're so stiff and not really super scary, and their movement is very like hobbly, and like they don't really all the. I guess so. This is the first point. This is the first time they assimilate anybody, right?
Yes. Although they haven't mentioned this as a
group. Yeah, they haven't used that as a I also kind of wish that I thought it would have been funny if instead of resistance is futile being the catchphrase that they had, if it was strength is irrelevant. Which is the first thing they say.
Everything's irrelevant, everything.
But yeah, just you know, there's like the I think their ship is the most effective thing about them as far as the actual visual and actual execution of the idea of the Borg.
You know, because I still think they fuck up the ship a lot. The show has a very hard time keeping perspective consistent. The Borg ship is supposed to be much bigger than the Enterprise, but there's only that one shot where they're like right next to it at the very start that you ever get a sense of how big it is.
Yeah.
The scenes, the Enterprise spends most of this just chasing the Borg ship.
Yeah.
And the ships look exactly the same size when they're flying through.
Which also brings me back to something I said in one of the other episodes is, why do they get that close? They don't need to. They're in space.
Yeah.
But I mean, obviously that's a production thing and you have to be able to show. It's not like you can be like, oh, well, that ship is 2 light years away.
Right.
Which we can sense with sensors, but you know, you can't show that on screen.
Yep. Yeah.
But yeah, I think the Borg themselves need, the fact that they're shown in like full bland lighting on the bridge and the fact that they just show up on the bridge and just kind of like casually grab at people.
Yeah.
Like it's just that they're not quite there yet.
Yeah.
Sorry, Sean, what were you going to say?
Well, I agree. I'd say though, at the time, this was really scary. I think the Borg to me are kind of like a Doctor Who villain in a way.
Absolutely.
They're very eerie, but right. If they had,
I'm sorry. Yeah. This is just to continue that, to add to that point. This was I watched the episode with my wife and she said, this is the only episode of Star Trek that's been really scary. So there might be I'm a little bit warned of how many times I've seen the episode where I've started to not notice these things. But as someone who has never seen the episode before, she considered it scary. So
okay, fair enough.
Yeah. I mean, it's not scary by what we could do today with lighting and all that. But I feel like at the time people were very impressed by this. Back in like 1991 or whatever, it was.
Well, I mean, I think the Borg here are very consistent with the tone that Next Generation always has. You know, it's a very it's like overlit. Like the Borg ship is lit to a degree that I don't understand why they don't need all that light on the Borg ship. So why is it lit so well? Like it's stuff like that. Like they fix this in the movies. They make the atmosphere much better, but it's the Borg are as effective as the production abilities of this show will allow them to be.
I agree. If they redid this series and did a new Borg, I feel like they should go 28 Days Later running zombie type route.
Well, really?
Like they would
know about that.
Charge you down and it would be super scary, something like that.
I could see them being more efficient. I don't know if necessarily running, but I think like I feel like they could be a little bit more efficient in their movement, like more like the Terminator than a fast zombie. You know what I mean? Like constantly moving forward to attain whatever their goal is.
The quickness kind of goes against them because one of the cooler aspects about them is the fact that they don't react until it's an imminent threat. You know?
That's true. That's a good point.
So, if they're running after people, it kind of flies in the face of they're too cool for school, basically. Go ahead.
I like that they don't attack right away. Like, you're free to walk the ship, and they don't do anything until they see you as a threat. Like, that's a super cool, scary idea.
Yeah,
but
it is.
One of the things that bothered me about the episode or that I would do to make it better is
I have a hard time believing that the Borg don't already see them as a threat. Like, they're able to walk around for too long before the Borg finally snap into gear, you know?
Yeah, right.
And the other part that bugs me is if the Federation is essentially a military organization, which it is, and they had information from the previous season about how dangerous these Borg were, why wasn't there more of a plan? Why didn't they have some kind of like UN summit meeting with Klingons and all of their allies to get together like a contingency plan?
Yeah, because
like whoever encounters this first, we all sign a treaty that we all drop what we're doing and immediately, you know, they don't do any of that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, well, and also the Admiral talks about how they've been preparing for this for months or something, doesn't he? At the very beginning.
Yeah, the problem is that they say that the Borg have arrived ahead of schedule. They're like six months. They're 6 months faster than they thought that anything would be possible to get there.
Right. Mm-hmm. But so, even in the next episode, when they show up and all the ships are destroyed, they're all Federation ships. Like no Klingon, no Romulan, no anybody came to help. So that to me showed a real lack of planning.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. Deep Space Nine kind of fixes that in a weird way. They kind of do a redo, but that's neither here nor there. But it is correct that it's only Federation vessels that get destroyed, which is unfortunate for the Federation at this point. I don't know how many ships they actually have. Right. I don't know if any series actually mentions how many ships that they normally have.
Somewhere between 3 and 100, I think.
So, I mean,
and they're all slightly different versions of like a dinner plate with two blue things shooting off.
Some of them look more like a poor man's version of the Enterprise. Some of them look a little bit better.
Dude, I've never seen a franchise get away with such poor ship design for such a long amount of time. It's impressive how ugly the ships are in this franchise.
Well, the ship the Admiral comes in on looks like it looks like the USS Excelsior or something from the movies.
I think it is the Excelsior. It's an Excelsior class anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
I would sort of fix the Borg. I mean, I wrote down, I think the Borg alternate here between really great and really not too great. Like Clay said, it's not really great when they just beam on board and sort of grab people.
yeah, it was kind of goofy, that whole sequence. But
why couldn't they just beam Picard off the ship at that point if they can freely willy-nilly go on?
Or you know what actually also would have fixed that sequence? If they had done it in a place that's smaller than the bridge. And I say that because, so the way that they shoot that sequence is they, you know, one Borg shows up on the left side of the ship, another Borg shows up on the right side of the ship, and then the third Borg shows up in the middle and grabs Patrick Stewart, right?
Yep.
And while that might make tactical sense, the problem is it looks like they only had the budget for one Borg, which is not the case because they're all different. But it's the kind of thing where it's like, well, I'm only seeing one on screen at a time.
Yeah.
So it feels like they're just moving that one to the – you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's not what they're doing. That's, like I said, it's not what they're doing, but that's what it kind of feels like. It's too big of a room for that to be – like an imminent threat.
That's
true.
Yeah. It might be better to have like Picard moving through the hallway for some reason, you know, and they appear at opposite ends of the hallway.
Yeah.
No escape.
So like,
I
was just going to say, like they're walking through the hallway. It's like Worf, Riker and Picard. One appears at the front. One appears at the rear and they both, you know, Riker goes after one, Worf goes after the other one. And then the third one shows up and takes Picard.
Right.
Something a little bit claustrophobic.
I agree. And to make it even better, if they had done one Borg that shows up in the engine room and like kills the lights suddenly panic. And then you start to see these green like little things appear and suddenly you see that like that laser pointer thing.
Yeah.
They could have done some really creepy ideas.
There's so much they could have done with the style of them that they really just don't do in this episode.
Yeah.
You just reminded me of the other downside, the other thing I don't like about this episode. And obviously it's a total budgetary thing. And obviously they didn't have the money or time to do this. But like I said before, the fact that they have 11 people die off screen and what sounds like it was a pretty significant destruction of the ship.
Yep.
And they don't give you an explosion. They don't have any indication.
They gave us a goddamn Geordi role.
Yeah, after he very nonchalantly waves two people out of the room. I mean, I can only assume one of the people that died in those 11 people is Russell, and I'm very upset about that.
Yeah. Oh my God, poor Russell.
And you know, like it's obviously they didn't have the budget to put into doing that, but it kind of I feel like
it does hurt it.
Yeah. Not so much that I think the rest of the stuff is that good that you're more concerned about the character stuff than you know, the explosions, which is a really great sign.
Well,
but,
I mean, here's my thing. The crew on this ship is just the best, right? Because the crew, like 11 people died, no one sheds a tear. When the Borg take Captain Picard after Riker gets his ass thrown against the wall by that Borg, the crewman who steps off her science station in the back comes over and helps him up and then walks back to her science station. It's like, you just had the fucking captain kidnapped and she is all business. Like, she is not thrown off. She is not upset by what's happened.
My favorite one of those guys is the girl who takes over the whatever the panel that Worf usually is at.
Yep.
Worf goes down to fight the Borg and gets punched in the face. And so there's a girl up at that thing. And as soon as she notices that Worf is now awake, she leaves.
it's a tough set because when you have to run back to your station, it's a little awkward. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I kept hoping that Worf was going to like vault over the chairs or something.
They should have just done a backflip off the captain's chair up to the thing. Yeah. It's a long way you have to go. And they don't do him any favors by shooting it in one wide shot.
You guys reminded me of the Geordi somersault when he's waving people out of the engine room.
Yeah,
the blast shield comes down and it's like shag carpeting in there, right? There isn't even a place for the door.
I know.
Yeah, it's a goddamn antimatter explosion being sealed by a metal door in shag carpeting where it touches. That's terrible.
It's a real poor design. You could see the spilt hot chocolate from when that ensign spilt it all over Picard on the floor.
If Geordi had done like a woo-wee as he went through, that would have been even better.
I appreciated Geordi's. He finishes the role, right? And he does a very superhero-y thing where he like kind of looks at the camera and then runs off screen. I just appreciated little nod he did there. I mean, the rest of this is pure. I mean, the plot here is just sort of fantastic. About they go into this nebula. There's not a lot that I feel that we need to talk about the nebula. Really, they just kind of do it to kill time.
I also want to say even the nebula looked great. They have that one shot that's like from above the Enterprise.
Yep.
So you get the silhouette with the purple light coming up from beneath it. It's awesome.
Yeah. It looked cool. It's also, it's probably one of those things if you're like in science, you're like, how small is the nebula? I guess that the Borg ship just can hang out in one spot and they have to come out the same exact side that they went in.
I checked this out because I thought, all right, what is a nebula really? Is it gas? And, you know, did they get the science right? Because we know more about nebulas now than they did back then.
Doesn't matter.
All right. I won't bore you then.
Sorry. No, I'm curious. Continue.
No, but I'd imagine a nebula in real life is like you have a particle of gas every like 3 miles, you know, because in space it's so huge that, you know,
it wouldn't create a cloud like that. And if you introduced a mass into it, then you would start to see gravity take the particles and you'd see like a cloud gather around the ship, around the Borg ship. You'd be looking at like two bubbles to have like a wall of fog, like what they show. It wouldn't quite work like that.
No.
As far as I know. And then that shot also was one of the ones that made the ship look very similar in size.
Yes. Because it comes out, it's exactly the same size as the Borg cube for no reason.
But storytelling wise, it's perfect. It's clear. You know, you don't question who is where or what's going to, I mean, it is absolutely a good decision, but science wise, I'm not sure.
No, it's the only way you can buy. They needed that 10-minute stretch where they could collect themselves sort of. And
there's not
many ways you can do that.
Right.
They could have attached themselves to the side of it like they do in Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah. Once you get too close, they can't see you anymore.
That's really the fact that you've mentioned that is really interesting that they keep showing them in the same the perspective is the same in terms of like the size difference. That's really strange that they do that.
Yeah.
Like even in that situation where, I mean, you could shoot both ships in a way in the nebula where it's clear that one of them, I don't know. That's a really strange choice. Maybe it's completely a television of the time thing where it's, you know, the size of the TV versus what shows. I don't
know. Right. Something. Yeah. Maybe, right. You know, if you're watching this on a 20-inch, you know, CRT TV, right. You can't afford to make the Enterprise a little dot on the screen.
Do you guys wish, because we saw the ship fire on the Borg and we saw a bunch of shooting going on. Do you wish that their weapons were more aggressive and cooler looking? Or do you like the way that Trek handles weapons?
I like the way it it doesn't work well when he says fire all weapons and it just kind of goes pew, 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 like a million things fly out of the ship. But like that does not look good. But when they just do single shots, it doesn't look bad, I don't think.
Yeah, I think there's a certain – I think the actual firing is fine. I think I agree with Wes in that when, you know, it just – okay, so let me put it this way. Something that is completely probably unnecessary at this point in the future but is always a mainstay of at least the movies. I don't know about how much they do this in the show. Is anytime they're getting ready to fire photon torpedoes, there's always a scene – down in the torpedo bay where they're like loading that shit to fire.
Right. Yeah.
And which is straight out of like a sub movie.
Yep.
And that, you know, it just, that adds a little bit more weight to it.
Yeah.
Seeing that, you know, seeing what they're actually doing and like loading the gun kind of thing.
Yep.
Whereas if you're just watching it here where you're watching it from, outside the ship, it kind of feels like a role playing game.
Yeah. Well, now you've kind of reminded me, I don't know if we've seen a ship actually be destroyed by their weapons at this point in the series. I can't think of a single enemy ship that they've destroyed.
Do they? I feel like they blow up one of the Romulan ships in yesterday's Enterprise, but I could be wrong.
There's Klingon ships.
Or the Klingon ships.
Oh, that's right.
Sorry.
They do. They blow up a Klingon ship. So there you go. So I'm wrong. But I was my point. Point before you just moved me wrong would have been you haven't seen what these weapons really do.
Yeah.
You don't see like actual destruction very much.
Well, I think one of the things that they don't really have a grasp on, because so often when they fire them, they are ineffective,
right,
is that there's really not a huge distinction between phasers and torpedoes.
Yes, that's true.
You know, like I think even now I feel like at least I remember as a kid thinking this, but even now sometimes I think this, like, why do they even bother shooting the phasers at all? Why don't they just shoot the – I mean, if they're going to use the weapons, they want to use them to blow something up. So the phasers never do anything.
Right.
Well, I think the torpedoes are a limited number. They don't have an infinite amount of torpedoes. But phasers, they do have an infinite amount as long as the ship is charged.
And I believe there's something like you can use the torpedoes at warp speed. There's something along those lines.
Interesting.
Right.
So either way, it's just the effectiveness of the there's no really distinction between which one works better.
Yeah, no one's ever been like, are you sure we need a photon when like maybe a phaser would do it? Like,
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I agree with the idea that the ship has a very gentlemanly way of using its weapons. It's not about aggression and like shells hitting the floor, so to speak.
Not until you get that third hyperdrive in the series finale. And all bets are off. They're using the Z axis. They're blowing shit up.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, okay, so they were limited by the budget. So I understand why the ship doesn't do donuts, why you don't have these crazy camera angles. Like, I get all that. But they could have easily had better sound effects or to differentiate the phasers versus the photons and had more of an impact and made it a little bit more aggressive.
Yeah.
You know? Right. Like, is there sorry, finish your point.
No, that was it.
Oh, I was just going to say, is there any sort of distinction, like, how powerful, like, on what level of power something like a photon torpedo is? Because, I mean, you have to think this is post these ships could be shooting hydrogen bombs at each other. And you have no idea.
I assume it's more powerful than an atomic explosion. Like, I would have to assume that they've advanced their weapons technology. Because in
they're doing a lot of damage to the environment of space then.
Hey, it's a big space.
Especially all those photon torpedoes that miss.
Yeah.
Who knows what those are hidden?
I feel like, Wes, you correct me, because you've seen the newer stuff too, but do they have like a spread, like do they use them as black, for example? Do they time delay the torpedoes ever in Star Trek?
I don't. Not that I can think of. It always seems to just shoot and explode. They never have like a delay on them or anything.
Right. there's got to be more interesting ways to use that weapon. I mean, what if they had like the equivalent of like Star Trek napalm, and they you know, carpet bombed with, you know, antimatter, and you saw people's faces melting, or something like that.
I still think the most effective space fighting that I've ever seen is all the ship combat in Battlestar Galactica, where it's silent and the camera is sort of following all the missiles as they go. So it's sort of eerie, but it's also very cool, like when they start attacking each other.
Right, and the war drums that they play, the soundtrack. And the camera's always like trying to, the ships are so fast, it looks like a news reporter is trying to capture the action through outside of a window. It has that first person. Yeah, that's totally awesome.
But anyway, so everyone check out Battlestar, good show. But anyway, let's we can finish this off just by saying, you know, the Borg flush the Enterprise from the nebula. They do the abduct Picard scene. They go over to attempt to rescue him. What do you guys think of the rescue scene?
The first thing I thought when I saw the crew they put together for that was, why the hell is Crusher going with them?
Yeah, that's a very, I guess just in case they found him hurt, but I don't understand why.
Well, I think the real reason is it's the season finale and everybody has to be on the show.
Yes, sure.
As far as like logic goes, it probably isn't. I mean, I guess that makes sense, but whatever.
I didn't like how when they found his uniform, it was just kind of folded in a space drawer on top of the ship. Like, that's the only thing. It wasn't incinerated. You didn't see a pile of
other. Why would they keep it? Why would they hold on to that?
Or even just like on the ground somewhere.
Right. And it wasn't. You should make it in tatters, right? I'd assume Picard didn't just take off his like pants and like shirt and be like, "All right, motherfuckers, like I'm ready now."
Okay, here's another change I would make.
Let me just say for the record, you started off rating this like a 6 out of 5.
No,
feel away.
Nope. These are all just very minor points. I still maintain that I think this is the best episode they've done so far, and I would recommend this to anybody. Mm-hmm. However, if I were to make one big change, I would have them find the uniform and the communicator in that little drawer. I would have the communicator still on Picard, and that would be how they find
him. Yes.
So they work their way through, they're following the signal from his communicator, and then they take out those things and they come down and like, that you do like the thing with Alien where it's like it keeps getting closer to their sensor shit. Yeah. And then he comes around the corner and it's Locutus.
I was thinking the same, like maybe, you know, you do a distant camera shot where the communicator's on the ground and they find it. And then his foot sort of walks into the shot and they sort of pan up and reveal.
Like, something like that. On.
I think
it would have been better if they had gone the anime hentai route, and when they abduct Picard, they do it with the tentacle monster.
Tentacle monster. Bring that guy in. You'd think they'd have something along those lines. Not interested.
Another question. Maybe you guys can answer this because I don't know. Sure. Why does he get a name?
Because do you know what Locutus means?
Isn't that the part of your fingernail, like toward the bottom?
The quick. Locutus is Latin for the one who speaks.
Oh.
So it's just because the Borg, as they mentioned in this episode, they feel that humans will need, they respond to authority figures.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to have Picard speak, and they gave him a Latin name, which means the one who speaks.
So maybe these guys aren't all bad, and they just need someone to communicate for them so they can be like, hey, we want to be part of the Federation.
Yeah.
So stop shooting at us.
Please, we're look at how well lit our ship is. Don't you want to come over here and just hang out with us?
We don't have any lights here.
We have plenty of drawers to put clothing in, though.
we don't have any clothes. You guys have all the cabinet space you need.
Yeah, we should have any clothes. we come in peace. We just want pants.
I mean, here's my thing about the Borg. We mentioned how they're not as intimidating as I think they could be. I think they fit the tone of the show perfectly, so I don't think this is not like a huge problem you can have with them if it fits the tone of the show. I wish... My weakest scene here, I think, and they're not, well, this one's kind of weak. My second weakest scene would be the Guinan and Picard one, just because I think Picard is a little flippant about humanity potentially being extinguished. when he's talking to Guinan and Ten Ford.
Well, here's another question. Again, Guinan is doing Troy's job. I mean, I know that he talks to Guinan because Guinan has some interaction with the Borg before, but like, why can't that scene be between Picard and Troy?
I think that's really it. Just because Guinan has, I think Guinan's response is very dark. You know, it's like,
we got exterminated.
A few of us managed to survive and we sort of scattered around the galaxy. That's what humanity is in line for.
Best case scenario.
And Picard is like sort of smiling at her. And it's like, this is supposed to be horrific. You're walking the ship as a, you know, as a sort of tradition for a ship that's about to be like go into battle and be exploded. Basically.
Also, that tradition probably a lot easier on sailing boats than on galaxy class starships.
Yeah, he's got a lot of.
It's going to take a couple days.
He's got to go to that phaser range. He's got to visit every holodeck. Oh my god.
Yeah.
But the other weak scene, I think, in this one is I'm not crazy about the Picard talking to the collective scene. Where he's captured and sort of walks into the room with them and they talk to him.
Oh. Yeah.
I feel Picard's lines in that are not good at all. But the one saving grace of that is that I love the whole, the Borg say everything is irrelevant. Whatever you bring up to them, they say it's irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
Their capper is, when Picard says, we will fight you to the death. And they say death is irrelevant.
Yeah.
Which is a fantastic line for them.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah.
And then it kind of cuts to nowhere. I feel that scene is a little bit lacking. Like, Picard doesn't... I could have gone for it a bit more. Maybe a little bit more out of that scene.
Well, I question why they would even bother chatting with him. Why wouldn't they just plug him in immediately?
That's true, too, yeah. Yep.
Again, but then you wouldn't have gotten that line.
They're not trying to be bad. They're just, you know, people... They just have low patience. And it's like, listen, this is going to be a lot easier if you just bend over.
It's like, they're like... The Salvation Army of space. They just need clothes and pants.
just give us your technology, any spare technology you have.
Picard, we brought you here for your shirt and your pants. Take them off.
I wish
we have infinite technology at our fingertips, but we're not really good at sewing because we all have like weird hands.
We've got little doodads, little gizmos attached to every single one of us. I wish that scene was a little bit crisper. The writing is a little bit off, except for that, obviously, the death is a relevant scene or a line.
Right.
After that, we get a very quick jump to Locutus. We have the rescue scene, which we talked about. The reveal of Locutus, they beam back. We have that great finale scene we were talking about where Riker starts telling everybody to get their fucking shit together and we have to do what we need to do.
Yeah.
They have the great final talk. Locutus gets his final speech. Thoughts on the ending from the Locutus speech onward. Sean, you want to start? In terms of...
Ooh, can I go second?
Yeah, you want to go second? Clay, start us off. In terms of everything about the ending, how effective this is, like, just really just sort of how unique it is in terms of the episodes that you've seen so far.
I mean, I don't know what there's left to say on my end. I just think it's perfect. I mean, it's just so well done. I watched it twice in the last couple days and I got chills both times. I knew it was coming both times, so it doesn't feel quite as natural. But man, that camera move where they spin around Riker to go into the close up is awesome. It's so good.
Yeah. You sort of get a glimpse of everybody too. The camera shows everybody before and then it sort of does a wide pan. You see a few people, you see Shelby in it. And it's just a great close up and Mr. Worf fire. The way to go out. Chad, what'd you think?
I wonder. Yeah, it's fun. I loved it just as much as Clay. I'm curious how many discussions did they have about when to cut? Because him saying fire is better than just the reveal followed by that cool camera angle and then cut and then roll credits, you
right,
know? Because they could have done it that way. But the fact that he's like, nope, we're going to attack him, like raises the stakes legitimately, you know, completely.
Yeah, there's,
so I love that.
There's three points where they could have ended it. They could have ended it right after you see where he says resistance is futile.
Yeah.
They could have ended it if they really wanted to be dickheads. When they make the camera move and he says Mr. Worf, and then they could have ended it there, which I've seen shows do that shit before, and it's really
bad.
But and then and it's basically you've got, you know, three aggressive ways to do it, and they picked the most aggressive way to do it, which is awesome.
Right. Yeah, it's It's fantastic. As we mentioned before, it's Locutus gets to say number one. They mention in the production show notes that the, I think it's a cool effect, the Picard sort of head-mounted laser, when it looks into the camera lens, it causes that like refraction thing.
Yeah, yeah.
They said that was just a mistake. It wasn't intentional, but it,
really?
It came out pretty cool.
Because they do it, they do it twice. Yeah, they do it twice.
Yeah, yeah.
That's hard to imagine. I think, I mean, if you were Patrick Stewart and you had a laser pointer on your head and you were practicing, I'm like, why wouldn't you put it right in the lens?
Yeah.
Right at that moment where you give your lines. Like that's what a Shakespearean actor would do if he had a laser pointer.
that's actually written into the stage directions of
Macbeth. Macbeth enters with laser attached to head.
Three witches around a cauldron, all with lasers.
Pointing directly at the quote unquote camera. Whatever that is.
Anyway, it's a startlingly good episode. I don't know. I'll get to my final thoughts, but I mean, it's a fascinating ending. It's a cliffhanger that you don't really, I don't know. I mean, the Trek has never done this kind of cliffhanger before. You have 3 months of waiting to see what the resolution is going to be, which we will get to.
What would be another ending? Like, let's say that you didn't know what was about to happen. What would be another way to go from the end of this episode?
Are you talking the way to end the episode or the way to resolve the story in the second half?
To resolve the story. Right. Like, would you have had Picard die? Would you have had Geordi die?
Well, actually,
we get to the point, don't we?
There's another Trek podcast I listen to called Trek About. And one of the guys on their Best of Both Worlds episode made a really interesting point about, they were talking about how modern and unmodern this show is and how modern shows would have done it. If this was a modern show, you probably would have ended your season just as we did here, right?
Mm-hmm.
The entire next season, Picard would have still been a Borg.
That's interesting.
You know, they would have stretched this thing out. And I think it's, you know, this is the way this show does it, so you can't really criticize it for doing it, but this episode loses a little bit of impact because of how contained it is. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you mean exactly? I'm not really.
Well, because the idea of assimilation does not have a lot of time to breathe here. Like, this will be easier to talk about when we watch the resolution, but Picard sort of bounces back quite well from
I see what you're saying. Like, yeah. I think that's probably. I haven't watched the second half in a long time, so I don't remember exactly how it wraps up, but. I do remember thinking that, I mean, yeah, that's kind of something that you don't bounce back. Like even, I think what's actually unique about it and really difficult to deal with is there's no real parameters on what they've done to him entails.
Right.
So, you know,
which is going to be examined a little bit in part two.
Yeah. So
at this point, nothing.
At this point.
Yeah.
Turning him into a Borg makes it look like he's basically dead.
Right.
And they've got machines just using his body or something. So you have no idea the extent of what they're doing.
I see it as two ways. You could either see him as dead or you'd be like, oh, just pull that shit off him and he'll be okay.
Yeah. Well, either way, there's going to be some residual shit going on.
Yes.
And to have him, I think it would have been interesting. I know they probably don't do this, but I think it would have been interesting. At least they don't do it till first contact. It would have been interesting to have him have a lot more lingering effects from it.
Oh, they will.
We'll get into it.
This is actually probably good for the second discussion we have because this is getting into the end of
the
next
episode.
Yeah, we'll
cut it off here. But I wanted to. I wanted the people who did Best of Both Worlds, one and two, to be the same people, and I want the same you two to be the same who are on Family, because Family deals with a lot of this fallout.
Yeah.
It's kind of an unofficial part three of Best of Both Worlds.
So just to answer what you asked, because you guys know how this ends. I don't remember at all how they wrap this up.
Sure.
I honestly don't know, because I mean, if you're looking at it just from a story point of view and not from like, well, who needs to be on the show? I mean, I guess the answer would be to have them shoot it and either the Borg ship blows up and he dies, or it's in an ineffective weapon or something. I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy, the guy who wrote it, really wrote them into a corner.
He did. Well, the positive thing is he came back, obviously, and he took responsibility and wrote the second part of this, which we'll get into in an episode. So let's wrap it up here. I think we've had a pretty good discussion about Best of Both Worlds. Let's go to our final thoughts. I'm going to play an audio clip, and we're going to get into our final thoughts about Best of Both Worlds and maybe some light thoughts about Season 3 in general.
The captain. We were unable to retrieve him, sir. The captain has been altered by the Borg.
Altered? He is a Borg.
We'll go back. I need more people. We need to retune the phasers again. We'll get him out of there.
Commander, reading subspace field fluctuations from within the Borg ship. Looks like they're regenerating, restoring power. They could be capable of warp any minute.
Is the deflector ready?
It's ready.
Will, he's alive. If we could get him back to the ship, I might be able to restore...
This is our only chance to destroy them. If they get back into warp, our weapon is useless.
We'll sabotage them again if we have to.
We can't maintain power. We don't have the time. Prepare to fire.
At least consult with Starfleet Command. Get Admiral Hansen on subspace.
Belay that order, Lieutenant. There's no time.
Sir, we are being hailed by the Borg.
On screen.
Of Borg. Resistance is futile. Your life, as it has been, is over. From this time forward, you will service us.
Mr. Worf. Fire.
Guys, do I even need to ask? We're going to rate this episode on a scale of 1 to 5. 1 being absolute dreck, which is like Transfigurations, which is the episode right before Best of Both Worlds. Or we're going to give it a 5, like a Yesterday's Enterprise, one of the modern classics of this TNG series. So, Sean, how about you start us off? What do you give it, 1 to 5?
I'm going to go 5, but I'm going to say that I don't like judging this by itself. I feel like I'm judging the first half of a book. And when people review my books and they only review like part one, it drives me crazy. But I understand why we're doing it this way. But I will say that I vote both of these episodes a 5.
Okay. Clay.
Two and a half?
Ooh,
yeah,
that's real generous. Real generous.
No, you know, I'm going to be really. We can do half points, right?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, I am actually going to give this a 5, but I am retroactively going to give Yesterday's Enterprise a 4.5.
Wow. Okay.
Because
there can only be one.
Yes. Well, no, but I just think that this. Like you said, Sean, I agree with you to a point where it's difficult to judge it alone because it is the first half of two parts. But if you're going episode by episode, if you're judging the episode on how it stands on its own, like I said before, I think you can't really get better than this. Or maybe you can. I don't know. I'd be really impressed to see it. I think there's enough wrong with Yesterday's Enterprise that it's not as good as this. So I'm going to say, yeah, I'm going to give this a 5, and so far this is my only 5, I think.
Interesting. Yeah, you know, Sean, I think I kind of agree with you in terms of it's tough to review these one as a standalone thing.
Right.
I think I could come up with a lot of criticisms if I wanted to take this as a one-parter in and of itself. I still think it's paced extraordinarily well. It's probably one of the best-paced episodes that they've ever done.
Right.
It's a fascinating idea. The Borg are effective enough, which is great, you know, in terms of how the show came out. I think that's the Borg are the weakest part of this one for me. I just wish they were a little bit more atmospheric, a little bit more intimidating in some ways.
Yeah.
It's still going to get a 5. It's a 5 for me. It's clearly one of the best episodes the show has done. Although, I'll let you finish. Yeah. My last sentence for this would be, watching this, I think Best of Both Worlds is a 5, although I'm not sure if it's one of the top 5 episodes that the show has done. Or will do, not has done. Will do.
Okay. Well, you let me know when we hit one of those.
Okay.
I was going to say, I was just going to say about, I think Clay reminded me of something. Talking about yesterday's Enterprise, I feel like that one is better episode overall because the high points are so high and the stuff that they tackle really does expand the characters really well. I feel like if this episode is kind of like a BMW, which is a great car, but nothing really wrong with it, that's great. But I feel like yesterday's Enterprise is a Ferrari that just breaks down every now and then. And in a way, yesterday's Enterprise, I mean, you get more out of that episode because the highs are so high.
I have to rank these things. It's a tough thing to decide which of these episodes is better. This one is, I think that's a beautiful analogy. This one is very clean. Yesterday's Enterprise might have the highs that only part two of Best of Both Worlds bring, like the emotional stuff that only part two of this one brings.
All right. I will agree. I'm probably being a little bit over the top. I will not retroactively change my rating of yesterday's
it's
Enterprise.
It's my Ferrari analogy, isn't it? It's my BMW Ferrari.
No, I understand what you're saying. I know how much we both love Tasha, and she's in that episode.
She's not allowed in my Ferrari.
No, I understand. If I had to really rank the two of them against each other, I would say they probably come out even just because this is the first half of a two-parter, so you can get away with more. And yesterday's Enterprise, though it does break down every now and then, as you said, it is a standalone, so they had to do as much as they could in 48 minutes or whatever. Yes. So I do give it a ton of credit for that.
That's why I will stay the hell away from half points. I'm going to give them both 5s. I'm going to say this is a wonderful episode. Yesterday's Enterprise is a wonderful episode. Depending on who's talking to me, I could easily see either one flip-flopping or the other one.
I will say one thing, though. I do agree with you, Wes, that the Borg themselves are probably the weak part of this. But I will also say that I don't think it matters.
No.
Because everything else they do around it is so good.
Right. Their reactions to the Borg, even if the Borg themselves aren't great, their reactions are what are selling this story.
Yeah. That's well said. Absolutely.
And the stuff with Riker is just so good. I mean, I completely buy all of the character stuff with Riker and, you know, what's her name? Shelby.
Yep.
Is good. That kind of character can very easily become too much of that character.
Yeah.
And I think they do a pretty good job with having her being overzealous, but realistic.
Yeah.
And you get an interesting look at an angle of Riker that you haven't gotten to this point, at least as far as I know.
This has been the strongest inner Starfleet turmoil we've ever seen on the show, right? This is the anti-Roddenberry thing.
I was going to say Roddenberry must have hated this episode.
He might have been totally out of it at this point, but this is everything that he was not for. You have Starfleet officers yelling at each other. You have petty jealousy. It's fascinating. It makes
sense. Yeah, I was going to ask what his involvement was because I know he was still alive, but I wasn't sure if he was pushed out somehow or if we even really know.
I'm fairly sure he's very ill at this point. So
good.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's on his on his way out. Oh, for better or for worse, it's just fascinating. The last thing I'll mention before we go was there's the Blu-rays that I'm watching. They did like a writer's room special, which was hosted by Seth MacFarlane, which was hilarious.
Really?
Yeah. So he brought back Ronald D. Moore, Brendan Braga, the Indian writer, which I sound racist for not remembering his name, and then Rene Echevarria, or however you pronounce it.
Ron Moore and Braga were kind of not getting along for a while.
I think they've gotten better now. They had a falling out when they both worked on Voyager, but they seem okay now. But they had a funny thing there where they were like, MacFarlane asked a question of like, what was one of the worst like bits of writing you've seen on the show? And Ronald D. Moore brought up scene description that he said Roddenberry had written for Menage a Trois, which you guys didn't watch with me, but if you're familiar with it, it's the one.
Enter Gene Roddenberry, new, covered in butter.
As alone, how weird that episode is that his mistress wrote it and his wife stars in it.
What?
So outside of that, there's a scene where Loxana, Riker, and Troy are having a picnic on Beta Zed, and Loxana holds up a bit of lettuce and gives it to Riker, and she's like, this is a delicacy, eat this. And Riker eats the lettuce, and it's a very broad comedy of he's like, oh boy, this lettuce is no good. The original scene description, according to Ronald D. Moore, came back from Roddenberry, where he's like, it's the same scene, except Loxana pulls out a phallic-looking veiny vegetable and feeds it, and hand feeds it to Riker. And they all start just cracking up in this behind-the-scenes documentary. It's just like, oh my God. Oh,
why didn't they? That would have been way better.
Tough to say. Man. Anyway, thank you guys. Thank you guys for coming on. If you enjoyed the content today and you're on YouTube, a like and a comment's appreciated. If you're on iTunes, a rating and review helps me out a great deal. That's it. We're done with season three. I am almost 50% of the way done with this series. And
wow.
I say that that sounds more negative than I mean, but we're making good progress. Season three was a big turning point. I'm very excited for what may come. You guys are going to be back for Best of Both Worlds Part 2.
Yeah.
And yep. Family.
My favorite episode of the series, I think.
We'll give it a 4.5.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to give it a 2 right now. And I'm not going to check. I don't care how good it is. It's getting a 2, Sean.
We'll see how it goes. Anyway, thanks, guys, again. And yeah. We'll be back with Best of Both Worlds Part 2 with these guys in a couple days. See ya.
Thanks, Wes.